I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
Now, I've told you about all of the things that I can specifically tell you with certainty, probably, hopefully I didn't get it wrong, without bringing in a legal expert. And that is why we have the Heritage Foundation's legal fellow, Zach Smith, on with us now. Zach, save me before I say stupid things and smart people like you go, oh, sweetheart, no. I listened to the whole thing this morning. And this is something where I generally, if I'm listening to something like this, I'll drift off in my own thoughts and I won't be able to pay attention. But I was riveted today. I was glued to it today. For people who may not know what took place this morning, give us that really baseline overview of what the Supreme Court took on today.
Sure, absolutely. And thank you for having me on to talk about this case. And what you were saying right before I came on was not stupid at all. In fact, you were hitting all of the main issues very well. So well done.
Thank you. We should end the interview right there. That should be it. Thank you, Zach Smith. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Always happy to come on, always. But no, look, this is a very important case, probably the most momentous case the court's going to hear this term, and frankly, one of the most momentous ones it's going to hear in a very, very long time. Essentially, what the court's being asked to do is overrule their prior precedents in Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey. And if they did that, what that would mean, it wouldn't mean that all abortions are immediately outlawed or prohibited across the country. It would return the issues back to the states, where it resided before the court created this right out of whole cloth with its Roe v. Wade decision. And look, I think it's important to recognize, even if you agree with abortion, I do not, I think it's bad as policy matter, but even if you disagree with me on the policy grounds, the legal underpinnings of Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which give the constitutional right to an abortion, are very problematic. And even liberal legal scholars have recognized the problematic nature of the constitutional or legal underpinnings of those decisions. And so I think it's perfectly appropriate for all of us to say, look, even if abortion, if you know we disagree about abortion, whether it should be legal or illegal, it is not appropriate for our federal courts to create this right out of whole cloth because it's found nowhere in the text, structure, or history of our Constitution.
We're speaking with Zach Smith. He's a legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation to break down what has taken place so far this morning with the Supreme Court as they hear an abortion case. The words that I heard, I'm going to give these to you in order that I want you to respond to them. The words that I heard over and over and over again, the first one was viability. And how that is really at the very core of what is being discussed here. And then stare decisis, which I assume is a really fancy way to explain something that I actually do understand. So let's start with the viability part of this and explain how that is really what is on trial in this situation.
So viability is the line that the court created. The Supreme Court created this line basically as kind of the bright line where the states, after viability, would have a more compelling interest in regulating abortion. Pre-viability, essentially there's not much states can do to regulate abortion. And all that viability line means is whether or not an unborn child can survive outside of the womb. Now, what's interesting about this, you know, in the 70s when Roe v. Wade was first decided, that viability line occurred much later in pregnancy. But because of advances in medical technology, that viability line keeps getting earlier and earlier and earlier in pregnancy. And so I think what the Mississippi advocates were trying to say, who were urging the court to overturn Roe v. Wade, is that, look, the factual situation in the 1970s and even in the 90s when Planned Parenthood v. Casey was heard are much different than they are today. Not only are there medical advances that make pregnancy, childbirth much safer than they have been historically, but also there are new laws and programs in place to help women if they, in fact, go through and have a child. And so I think it was all to say that, look, even the policy arguments, which the justices should not be in the business of advancing, but even those arguments no longer really support the court's continued adherence to Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey.
So, you know, we're go ahead.
Now, I just can quickly answer your second question, A, about stare decisis. You know, if only someone had written a paper explaining stare decisis called Stare Decisis 101, my colleague Tom Gipping and I at Heritage actually wrote that paper earlier this year. You can check it out on my Twitter at TZ Smith or at heritage.org. But we wrote the paper because we anticipated this would be an issue in this case. And it basically explains what it is, how it's been applied by the court, and why, you know, in our view, it shouldn't really be applied for the court to continue adhering to Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey.
You could call that stare decisis for dummies. I don't know if there's a copyright infringement there.
Not at all.
So, yeah, there are a lot of legal experts on Twitter right now. If you haven't looked, there are a lot of people who are weighing in with their legal expertise. You know, one of the things that I heard, and I can't remember which justice it was, and I don't know if you were able to take in the whole hearing, but they were talking about viability, and they were questioning the argument that was being made in favor of, you know, pro-choice abortion rights. The justice said, you know, wouldn't a woman's interest in being able to terminate her pregnancy be the same before viability and after viability? Suggesting that if we draw this, you know, some might call it an arbitrary line. I wouldn't call it an arbitrary line at 15 weeks. And you find out, you discover you're pregnant at 12 weeks, which is an absolutely possible time frame to discover that you're pregnant. You discover that you're pregnant at 12 weeks, and you determine, I want to end this pregnancy. I'm going to have an abortion. If you were to discover you were pregnant at 16 weeks, you would still have those same interests, you know, if that was what you wanted to do at 16 weeks. And then they then turned it around and said, wouldn't the fetus or whatever they referred to the baby as, I call it a baby because of the baby, wouldn't the baby have the same interests before and after that same line of viability?
Well, that's exactly right. And I think it really goes to show kind of what a house of cards this is and how the logic starts to collapse on itself once you start digging into these questions. And look, one of the best questioners I think that's emerged recently on the court is Justice Clarence Thomas. He started asking more questions during the pandemic, the telephonic oral arguments, and he's continued that trend. And I thought he asked one of the most pointed questions today at oral arguments. He put it to those who were urging the court to keep Roe, to keep Casey. He said, look, you know, in the past, we have held that a state can prosecute a mother who has ingested cocaine post-viability and has harmed the child. Why couldn't the state prosecute her for ingesting that cocaine and harming the child pre-viability as well?
Right.
Clearly, the state has an interest in protecting both the mother and child from the harm that's caused by cocaine, whether it's post-viability or pre-viability. And so I think his point was that interest, and it's the same point you were making, doesn't really change regardless of which side of that viability line you're on.
We're speaking with Zach Smith, who is a legal fellow at Heritage Foundation. I could talk about this for 3 hours. There's some people in my audience who would love for me to do that. There are other ones who have already turned us off. I hope they come back. So we would like to have you back to talk more about this after we find out more. I want to ask you two questions before I get on to the other subject here that I want to hit regarding Heritage Foundation, something very important that's going on there. Did you feel, listening to the arguments today, did you feel a shift? Did somebody come out ahead? Going into the locker room at halftime, was there somebody who you felt like was winning? And then what is the timeline ahead of us? Is this decision going to be decided tomorrow, or is it going to take some time?
Well, I think the most important three justices to watch in this are Justices Barrett, Kavanaugh, and the Chief Justice, John Roberts. You know, if one of them were to defect and kind of decide the case and uphold Roe or Casey, you know, there are still likely the votes there to overturn those decisions. But if all three of the justices were to vote with the liberal bloc of the court, that would not be a good outcome, I don't think, for this case. You know, certainly based on I'm hesitant to read any tea leaves. Justice Barrett, Justice Kavanaugh, they were asking very good questions. You know, Justice Kavanaugh gave a list of other cases that the Supreme Court has overruled in the past. The one justice I think that it'll be interesting to watch is Chief Justice John Roberts, see what he tries to do. You know, he's been accused of trying to be a political justice in the past. I certainly hope he doesn't take political considerations into account and just sticks to the law and reaches what I view as the legally correct conclusion that those decisions should be overturned. Now, in terms of timing, I suspect we won't see this decision until closer to the end of the court's term, which typically occurs in June every year. So we probably have about 6 or 7 months before we'll know the outcome of this case.
And just before the 2022 elections, that should be very, very interesting to see. So let's shift gears here. Speaking with Zach Smith, the legal fellow at Heritage Foundation. I only have a couple minutes, but I want to talk about the Heritage Foundation's role in pushing it back against Biden's vaccine mandate for private companies.
Right.
Heritage Foundation has over 200 employees, and they've taken a stand here. Tell me about what the Heritage Foundation is taking up on behalf of this anti-vaccine mandate stance.
Well, look, Heritage Foundation filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration. And I think it's important to realize, Annie, you know, filing lawsuits against the administration is not something traditionally that the Heritage Foundation has done. We traditionally have provided the research, the writing, you know, kind of the back-end support to a lot of other conservative organizations who go out and actually do the frontline litigation. But because this mandate applied directly to the Heritage Foundation, as it does to other private businesses, because it's such an egregious overreach by the Biden administration, I think it was important for Heritage to step forward and basically make clear, no, this is legally problematic. We're going to take a stand, and we're going to sue to protect, you know, our rights and the rights of our employees, and frankly, the rights of all Americans. And so that's what exactly happened in this case. And so Heritage filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration, basically asking a court to declare their vaccine mandate unconstitutional.
What's the timeline on this lawsuit? How quickly could it have some sort of effect on what people are required to do?
Well, it's hard to say. It's particularly hard to say because there are so many lawsuits out there challenging the vaccine mandate. Most of those lawsuits have been consolidated in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. They're, you know, acting on a pretty expedited schedule there. A lot will depend on how the court rules on a couple of procedural motions. But I am hopeful that this will continue to move at a very quick pace because the issues are so very important.
Well, we want to follow up on both of these really important issues facing Americans in all states. I personally am appreciative of Heritage Foundation stepping into the fray here to push against these tyrannical mandates from this administration. And as far as the Supreme Court conversation about abortion goes, as you said, this is a big one. And I think a lot of people
Absolutely.
Will have their eyes upon it. And we need people like you to help break it down for us. I'm going to call me a dummy. I won't call my listeners dummy. They're smart because they listen to the show. But I need it in plain, simple terms. And I'm grateful for you, Zach. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on, Annie. Take care.
You as well. Zach Smith, a legal fellow at Heritage Foundation.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.